What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Primal King Podcast. This is episode number 99. Can you believe that? We are at 99 episodes in, one away from 100. So it's going to land on a solo episode. So here's what I'm wondering. Would you guys like to do like a Q&A about the first 100 episodes? Could be about guests, about stuff I've learned. It could be about maybe stuff that you've learned. Maybe it's just about our life and I don't know, just whatever questions that you have over the last almost 2 years of doing this now. So I'm kind of thinking that would be cool. Maybe I'll put it out on Instagram and see what questions you all have. Now, for today's episode, every once in a while you talk to somebody and it's like you just immediately hit it off. You're just kind of like, I don't know what you call it. Is it like kindred souls to where it's like, man, if we probably lived next to each other, we'd be buddies. And that's exactly how this happened with Bert today. Just an awesome guy. Great story. Kind of has like this Forrest Gump story that you guys I know are going to love. We also had a special guest, as you know. I have a little office, which I use as my studio. And my four-year-old twins decided to come in the middle. So I'll let you hear that portion of it too. It's real. It happened. Not going to edit it out. So hopefully you enjoy that. Also, real quick, we just now finally restocked on crossomeats.com. So that means you can go on there, you can buy a la carte, you can get a subscription every month, have it delivered to your door, you can buy bundles, whatever it is that you want to do, you can make it happen now. Go to crossomeats.com, do it now because we will sell out again. It happens every time I warn you and then you reach out and say, why are you guys sold out? Well, I'm warning you again, crossomeats.com. All right, let's get started. So the question is this: how do we live the best life that we can with the limited amount of time that we get to be here? Is it by accumulating success and fame and fortune and everything else that society tells us that we need in order to be fulfilled? Or is it much more simple than that? My name is Derek Wilson. I'm the host of the Primal King Podcast, and we're going to be answering this as well as many other questions as we move forward. All right. What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Primal King Podcast. I'm fired up for my guest today. This is someone who has been immersed in the world of human performance for as long as he can remember. He was a four-time Division I All-American in track and field, an SEC champion, a former record holder, I guess we'll talk about the world stuff, in weight throw and an Olympic trials athlete. From there, he's gone on to co-own and build one of the most recognizable brands in exercise equipment, Sorenex. Alongside his father, they've gone on to be the inventors of hardware and applications to make people the best versions of themselves by being more efficient, effective, and safe on the sports field as well as the battlefield. Most importantly, I've heard from several people that know him personally. He's a good man with a beautiful family that understands what is truly important. I want to welcome on Mr. Bert Soren. Again, Bert, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Derek. I really appreciate you having me and thanks for the kind words.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So one of the things, I guess, maybe just to kind of start with. So I know with Sorenex and kind of building the company, and I'm sure most of the people listening have probably either used your equipment or heard about it. But it actually started with your dad, right?
Of course. Oh yeah. Yeah. Nothing happens, you know, I just happen to be in the good years, I guess. You know, Pop started it in our carport, all coming up on 42 years ago, gosh, 1980. And, you know, just started from a passion, and he'd always had the pursuit for strength and a hard, capable life. And that's something that he had a gifting in. He was a strong athlete and understood how to build things and kind of taught himself a lot of those aspects. And got a portion of his life that he just wanted to, you know, kind of scratch an itch like a hobby, like, hey, I think I could build that better than what's currently in the market. And he did. And of course, a couple of people buy some stuff and then you go, okay, well, hobby now kind of turns into a business and see what happens and keep believing in yourself and investing in yourself. And, you know, 42 short years later, it's a world renowned brand overnight.
What a cool story. So obviously, you were probably growing up around him trying to build this business.
Of course.
Were you like going to work with, you know, work? Cause he was teaching school for a while, right? While he was building this.
Yeah. He was teaching school, for years. And then we had Soren playgrounds because when he was teaching school, and of course the school districts didn't have a lot of money here in South Carolina to build a lot of neat playgrounds and things like that. So he started Soren playgrounds. We started building that. And then Soren Equipment, which is what later was changed to Sorenex. And so there's like the three-headed monster going on. And And then finally he dropped the teaching and then went after Soren Playground, Soren Equipment, and then eventually just went Soren X full time. So yeah, there's been no shortage of effort, you know, sometimes not the most efficient effort, but it's been a hard road.
Yeah, for sure. So when you were young, what was it like? Were you going to work with him? Were you just kind of witnessing that, or what type of impact?
I was witnessing it. I mean, you just know that dad's always dirty and busy and banged up and doing hard stuff, you know? And so later, I think I was always around it. And then, you know, you see him training in the garage because he was still lifting weights and being very successful in that in our garage space. So you just see it. It's like, it's just in kind of infused into life, like heavy things, hard work, dirty, you know, capable stuff. Like that was kind of the jam. And then we had our outdoor pursuits that we were going after. And then when I guess I was 15, kind of got my first real job per se. I worked in the shop at Soren X, and I was, you know, kind of I was certainly the lowest man on the totem pole, you know, doing the grunt work and the dirty stuff, and learned kind of from there up the chain, you know, what needs to happen and where the sticking points are, and kind of lived through those sticking points, and did some installs and some things like that, and some coaching of some athletes. So I kind of hit all phases of it over the years. And then when I graduated from college after my collegiate athletic career, came on in 1999 full-time here at Soren X and haven't looked back.
So when you started the first job at 15 and you were kind of doing like the grunt work, was it something that you wanted to do? Were you like, yeah, I see myself, or did you kind of want to go off and do your own thing?
I mean, at 15, you don't really know what you're trying to do. Like, you're trying to like hang out with girls and stuff. I always wanted to be big and strong because I always thought that was cool. I wasn't at the time. I was lifting weights and learning, but I was a late bloomer. So it was taking, but not heavily. I appreciated what my dad's business was, and I believed in it, but still it's kind of like, it's dad's thing. And, I know he needs help. And he basically told me, he's like, you know, this is where you're working this summer. And I'm like, okay. You know, all my friends had cool jobs at the mall and like at the, you know, being lifeguards at the local community pool, like pretty cush things. They're doing all this fun stuff. And, you know, I'm getting off of work at 4 p.m, just destroyed dirty, you know, just because you don't know how to pick up steel the right way. You don't know. You're like, you just come back just coated with black because you don't know to not touch your face after you grab the steel. And, but that was cool. You know, I hated it at first because it was really hard. You're like 15 years old and you want to sleep in the summer and do all this other stuff, and you get up and, you know, working with men every day. But it was cool getting a paycheck, but it was also cool, you know, at the end of the summer. I think that's the year we did University of Delaware that summer when I was there. So, you know, you see from a start to finish, like I helped unload the steel trucks. We didn't have a forklift at the time. So by hand unloading the steel trucks to measuring, laying out, you know, following cut sheets, hand, you know, on a bandsaw, cutting the pieces, reaming them out, taking them to the drill press, drilling them myself, taking them over, the welders welded up. Then we get all the way back to paint. That was after the weld, and chipping the BBs, doing the whole thing. We were wet painting at the time, not powder coat. So all the way through up to, you know, literally packing the truck with this awesome yellow equipment going out to the University of Delaware with logos on it and all this other stuff, like getting to see from a start full process, like that was really, really cool. And you see how much, you know, I grew over the summer, and then the skill sets that I got, and then just, you know, literally taking steel and turning it into something that a customer would be extremely happy to have in their place, which was really cool.
Wow. How cool. So were you, cause one of the things I always find fascinating when someone's first starting a business, and just kind of like the stuff outside of the product, let's say, right? The branding, maybe the packaging. Were you guys focused on any of that in the beginning, or was it, no, we're just going to make the absolute best equipment? Or like, how was that, I guess, kind of coming into it?
Yeah, we didn't have like any really marketing agenda or plan at all, probably for the first 25 years, literally. I mean, it was maybe
it's just like word of mouth then, or?
Yeah, it was all word of mouth. Yeah, our goal was to make equipment that no one else made make it super cool and better than what we felt was out there, give the customer more than they asked for, solve problems that had never been solved before in the weight room, and do an amazing job, and then they'll tell their friend about it. Like, that was the marketing plan. And you grow a business very slowly doing that because there's no brand exposure. I mean, you got to remember, that's so far before the internet, everything like that. You just do a great job, and then you try to make an impact on that customer with what your work is and who you are as a person, and then hope that they call their friend and say to go with you or to at least look at you. And then you ride the roads and you visit people and you build relationships and you do it just the old fashioned way. And that's how we did it. So then, you know, when social media, well, not even before social media, when the internet, like the early 2000s started popping, you know, you start looking and realizing there's some white space there to do some marketing, but we still did like all the typical print media and magazines. And like, we try that stuff. We didn't have enough money to put towards a lot of it. So we did very little of it. We just still continue to bet on ourselves and go, best thing we could do is just do a great job for the customer and build loyalty the slow sizzle way. And that will build our tribe. And so we really didn't have a lot of success early on in the marketing because we just didn't know how to do it. We didn't have a marketing director. It was me. I was like, I took a picture of a weight room and then I kind of cut and pasted it and then sent it to Kinko's. And then we made these handouts. And then I send that handout to a magazine company. I said, do this. And they're like, crap. And, you know, don't know what we're doing. And it's just how it is. You know.
Well, what's funny is, so, and the listeners know this, but I spent several years with a company called ClickFunnels. So it's an internet marketing software company. And it was all about the sizzle, right? Like, you guys kind of sound like you were about the steak, let the product sell itself and everything else. And, you know, I don't know. There's like a special place in my heart, I guess, for that, because I was so immersed in the sizzle side of business for so long, you almost get jaded. And it's like, yes, if you have great marketing and all of that, you can sell crap, right? And people will buy it just because of the marketing is so good. But there's also like the other side of it, which is, it's awesome to hear when people are successful because what they actually produce is awesome, not because of the fact that they're selling an awesome package full of crap, right? So no, it's super cool. When did you maybe get to the point though, to where it's like, okay, in order for us to get to the next level, we've got to take maybe the sales and the marketing and kind of some of that stuff serious?
Sure. That was probably more serious 2007, 8, 9, through that area. And really more so 10, 11, 12. And the idea was, you know, is it wasn't even to add a lot of sizzle. I just said, okay, if we know what we do is really good and we know what our purpose of doing it is good and our mindset and our lifestyle, let's just figure out who, what, when, how do we amplify and magnify and push out what we do, not try to change the narrative of any way, not try to like tweak it where it's like sizzle per se. It's like, how do we just expose who we are? And if that works, then great. And if that doesn't, then we were wrong. And so it's like, I feel like we were a really good steak restaurant, like better than all the other steak restaurants. No one knew about us, but if you knew to go to us, you had an awesome experience. You had the best steak of your life. And we just relied for 20 something years on customer go. No, seriously, go to Soren Steakhouse. It's amazing. Right. And then so finally it was just like, okay, let's just tell more people about it and to come do it. And so there wasn't even a really like a cool narrative way of telling the story. It was just like, we're doing this, you know, and we weren't very good at that either. The marketing side of it. And then finally, when social media started hitting and YouTube and things like that, and then we brought in, you know, initially it wasn't even brought in. We just kind of learned it ourselves. And we're like, okay, how do we amplify our message? And we brought in a couple different people that some worked, some didn't, but everyone got us a little bit step closer to doing that. And when someone wakes up every day and their goal is to educate, we saw more of an educate versus to amplify the message. It was like, just tell people really what we do and let them make the choice. And when we started building that into it, it just kept growing. And then in the meantime, our staff, we pulled on some people that they wake up every day. That's what their goal is. And then some of us in the staff just kind of got good at it too. We started realizing like, oh, okay, I understand how social media works. I understand. And again, I don't fully understand. I'm okay at it, but you know, you start kind of getting that side of like, okay, there has to be some sizzle or there's not stickiness. You kind of have to build the bandwagon approach of like, if everyone knows that's the best steak place, then you're probably going to get a lot more people. You know, you know a lot more about that than I do. I've just had to, you know, somehow been successful long enough to stick around long enough to figure it out. You know?
Yeah. Well, and I always find it interesting. And honestly, I didn't even kind of plan on us going here. But so when we started our direct consumer meat business, we were kind of like, okay, how do we market it? Right. Like how do we even let anybody know that this is what we do? And we kind of made the decision of like, let's just be honest about it. Like, let's just show the process. And what's wild to me is that I think when you are just authentic, and I think that sometimes that word gets thrown around too often and it's actually not authentic, but like, it's, I think people generally
like it's a canned authenticity. It's like,
I know exactly
what you need to do to be authentic. You're like, that's exactly the opposite of authentic.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why it's so hard, right? Because you see, I'm going to be vulnerable. And it's like, if you tell me you're going to be vulnerable, I'm suspect. Like, I'm sorry, but like, if you tell me that, but no, we were just like, let's just document what we do. And what was crazy is how many people are so fascinated by just like what you would consider normal life. Right. And how many people kind of want to be a part of what you consider to be normal life. And so that's kind of the way that we've approached it. And I mean, it sounds like it's been pretty similar for you then too.
Very, very similar. And it's a kind of an interesting thing because we just said, okay, we think we're doing some pretty cool things and the people that are around us we're excited about and they're doing some cool things. So let's just expose that. Whatever that is what we're doing. But that also keeps you inspired to grow because you realize that someone's keeping score.
Right.
You know, if I want to expose my life in most ways, I'm not going to contrive things to like, you know, do it for the gram, but it's also going to remind me, if you're just going to kind of blatantly open, expose what you kind of do, then go do some rad shit because. Yeah. Our 1999, our shirt said Live Strong on them. And Lance's trainer got one of our shirts, started using it in his emails. And then Lance took it and did the whole Live Strong campaign. But that was what it was about. It wasn't about you're going to go work out today. You're going to go do this. You're going to go do that. No, you're going to live in a strong fashion. And that's what your value system is going to be. And we kind of talk about now, we call it live the code. Like you kind of know it. You go, is that guy living the code? Nah, he's living the code. And people are like, well, what's the code? You go, if I have to tell you, you're probably not. I don't really know how to put my finger on it, but you know when you're doing the hard things and you're pushing your potential to the greatest. You know that. Your internal barometer knows that.
So do you think that was something, like when you talk about living by the code and pushing yourself, was that something, because it's like the old nature nurture thing, right? Obviously, you grew up with your dad and he was pushing limits and lifting heavy stuff and everything else. Do you think that was something more that was almost kind of the environment you were in? Or do you think that was something you were born with and you wanted to be the same way?
I would say it would have to be an environment because both my mom and my dad were very independent people and very, they were dreamers. Both of them had dreams of what they wanted to do and see and create. And they're both wildly, I mean, they got divorced when I was two, but they're so similar in some ways. Like, you know, my mom was a small lady and she still is, she's amazing, but she'll like decide to do a landscaping project because that's like was her heart. And she would do these projects that it would take, in my opinion, take 20 men 5 months to do, you know, and she would do it in 7 months, but she, a little 5'2", 105 pound woman would just, she would never stop. And she would have this vision of what this thing was going to be. And like an ant stealing a sugar cube, it was not going to stop until she got that whole thing done. And it was just so like her ability to see, to dream big and to see things, you know, and the same thing with my dad. So I just always saw my parents were both not ever doing things that normal parents did. You know, when I'm a kid, I mean, my mom and dad got divorced. Like I said, I live with my mom. I'm 5 years old and mom drives me. We drive down to Florida and she takes like a scuba lesson. This is like in the early 80s, single mom learning how to scuba because she wanted to master that. And then she comes back and buys a windsurfer and learns how to windsurf. And then she goes in like, I'm like,
thinking back, I'm like, none of her friends did it. No one. She was just like, I'm going to go do this now and be good at it. And then I'm going to move to the next thing next summer. And so, you know, I look at that and like, wow, they were always, and same with my dad, they're always trying to just squeeze every bit out of life and create new challenges for growth at all times. And that was what I was just always around. So, you know, at 10 years old, I was taking fly tying lessons and fly casting lessons. And, you know, with a bunch of 50 and 60 year old men, I'm a 10 year old kid learning how to tie flies. And none of my friends were doing that. It was just, this sounds really interesting. No one I know can do it. So let me go try something that's a classic hard skill and try to master something that all the only thing holding me back is the amount of effort I put towards it. There's no practice I got to be at. There's no this, there's no that. My teammate didn't do this. Like, no, if I want to be good at tying flies, I took a class and I stayed in my room for 10 hours a day that summer. I'd go outside and play and I'd come back inside and I'd tie flies. I'd go outside and try to fish with them. I go, and that's like all I did. But I look at that now and go, okay, those skill sets I was learning and seeing imprinted by my parents to just pick something and go after it full tilt. And it's almost better if your friends aren't into it because then you're doing it for you. And so that was something I have to say would have to be environment.
No, that's awesome. So then once you started getting in to maybe like the athletics and pushing yourself, I mean, I would assume that probably kind of translated into like the track and field and all the accolades and the success that you had there then.
Right. Right. So, I mean, I really wasn't an athlete, what I would consider an athlete until college, which is just a really weird, it doesn't happen that way. Most people are like athletes are little league and then some in high school, some in middle school, less in high school. And then in college, very, very, very few, you know? And for me, I didn't do many sports in high school. I don't think any in middle school, very little in the lower grades. I was just always outside. I was shooting BB guns and building forts and doing all that stuff. And then, so later in my high school career, I got into track and field through a Forrest Gump like scenarios, ended up on a track team in college, not knowing that I had walked onto one of the best programs in the nation. And just, you know, you just kind of go, okay, this is the standard. I don't even know if this is good. This is the standard. And you just assimilate to that, make a hard challenge and work your ass off. And then
how'd it happen? Did you just like, that looks like fun, I'm going to go give it a shot? Or like, cause I mean, it's not like you were going to, you know, Northwest Community College or something, like here in the SEC. Like, how does that even happen?
Here's how little I knew. Here's how little I followed sports and the little I knew about it. So I didn't know when people kept saying the SEC, I didn't know what they were talking about. And then they were like, no, but it's like their conference. I'm like, I thought a conference is like you go to a place and you talk. I'm like, why do y'all keep going and talking about this thing? Like, are we supposed to go talk to this thing? And they're like, no, the conference that South Carolina is in that we play football. I'm like, right, I've heard of that. But football season's during deer season, so I'm pretty much not inside during those times. So cool, this sounds neat. When is that thing we're supposed to go to? They're like, the SEC championships. I'm like, yeah, which one's that? They're like, oh, there's one in the indoor, one in the outdoor. I'm like, cool. So do I need to be good by then? And they're like, yeah, you probably want to be good by then. I'm like, got it. I mean, that's how stupid I was at 17 years old. I just was, that wasn't in where I was. Like, it's so dumb. And I just thought it was so interesting, you know? So to kind of the story. So I was supposed to go to Appalachian State because I wanted to go and be like a ski guide and a water rafting guide and grow a beard and just hunt and fish and all that stuff. So I applied to Appalachian State late because, you know, I'm a kid, I'm an idiot. And so I didn't get in time. So they're like, you could come in the spring semester. I'm like, okay, fine. I'll go to South Carolina. It's like 10 minutes down the road. That was my backup school. So I get in there. And then of course, like growing up in the 80s, like I thought college was similar to every 80s movie, which is like
Animal like House,
Animal House, Revenge of the Nerds, Porky's. Like, that's what I thought the, like, you know, college was. Like, this is gonna be awesome, you know. So for like the first 6 days, I just stayed drunk and just rode around my mountain bike all over campus. And I was like, went to all the parties. I was like, man, this is gonna be fantastic, you know. This is great. This is exactly what I thought college was gonna be like. And the seventh day. I was kind of hungover and hanging out in my dorm room. And I felt kind of crappy. I was like, all right, I need to probably go lift some weights or do something that's not terrible. So I called my dad. I was like, hey, you know, we did the weight room. So Sorenex did the weight room at the University of South Carolina in the athletic department, right? And he was like, yeah. Because I knew the one for the student center was terrible. And I knew our stuff was in there. And I was kind of used to good stuff, you know, being our gym at home. And I said, could you call the coach and see if I could work out there sometime? He said, yeah, sure. So he calls the guy. And this, again, this is 1994. So pretty much anything would fly back then. And coach said, yeah, tell him to come in after all the athletes are done. And again, I'm 17 years old, so I don't listen to details. I don't have any concept of time. And I halfway heard what dad said. I'm like, okay, cool. Hang up the phone. I ate my burrito or whatever. And I'm like, I got anything to do. Let me go. So I go to the weight room. Instead of like 5 or 6 o'clock PM, I show up at 2 PM. Well, if you're in the college system, you know that like every athlete on earth is in the weight room at 2 PM because they've all done their school. They've all like from 2 to 5 is when everyone is there. And this was a one weight room for all the athletes. So I just bebop in the place. I look around and this, you know, I'm in the stadium. I walk in, I look around and there's like guys lifting everywhere. Guys, girls, there's baseball players, track athletes, there's cheerleaders, there's football players, everybody. I'm like, man, this is cool. You know, I'm just a dude. And I walk in, I'm looking around, like walk over to the platform, load some plates, I start doing some cleans. It's cool, man. I'm enjoying this. This is great. And then I look over and they're doing vertical jump testing. I was like, wow, that looks badass. That looks fun. So I literally walk over and stand in line. They get there and they give me a piece of paper. I'm like, write my name on it. And he says, what's your name? I was like, Bert Soren. He's like, okay. And he's like, do your reach. And I did that. And he's like, all right, try to jump. I'm like, oh, this is cool. It's like a carnival. Like I get to try stuff. This is great. So I jump up and tap it. He's like, hey, 29 and a half inches. That's pretty good. I'm like, all right, cool. I guess it is. Hands me my sheet back and okay. And I just go back to, I just start doing some bench press. I'm over there lifting weights, just having a good old time. Cause it's early. I mean, it's literally the first week of school. So no one knows who anyone is. Cause it's all these freshmen. And that was before everyone had to wear like South Carolina gear. And I guess we didn't even have our gear yet. So everyone like dressed differently and they're just random crap on. So you could kind of just literally sneak into a college weight room and start working out. That's exactly what I did. And so they were doing body fat testing and I'm like, oh, that looks cool. And I was like, I'm thinking, you know, kid of the 80s is like, this is kind of like Rocky, you know, IV, like Ivan Drago has all these diagnostics. I was like, all right, go there and stand in line. I'm hanging out. And I had my sheet still. I'm like, all right, my sheet's probably going to like get my diagnostics. This is cool. So I walk up, the guy's like, all right, what's your sport? And I hand him my sheet. And I was like, track and field, because I threw shot and discus in high school, but I sucked. And so at least I knew enough about it to talk about it to get me out of having to have an uncomfortable conversation. So he goes, oh, okay. And then he said, well, you know, how far did you throw? What did you do? I said, shot put and discus. He was like, you look small for that. I was like, yeah. How far did you throw? I told him. He's like, well, that's not very good. I was like, yeah, I know. I told you I wasn't very good. And I'm like, why is this guy asking me all these questions when I'm supposed to be getting my body fat tested? So I'm getting kind of annoyed at this point. Cause I'm like, ah, crap. Why, you know, this dude needs to just hurry up with it. Let me go back to my workout. I don't want to get in trouble. He goes, well, my name is Larry Judge. I'm the throws coach at the University of South Carolina. And I'm thinking the one guy I could have lied to and said, I'm a shot put discus thrower is the one guy on campus that could call my bluff. Literally the shot discus coach. Shit. And he's like, oh, so, you know, you're going to throw shot discus. I'm like, yeah, I was thinking about walking on in the fall and in the spring. And I'm thinking that'll get me out of this. This is August right now. I got tons of time. This dude will forget, like whatever. He goes, well, I'm the throws coach and practice starts tomorrow at 2. I'm like, all right, well, this is August. Like, that's a spring sport. He goes, son, you're in college now. It's a full-time deal. I was like, okay. I was like, all right, coach. Well, he goes, all right, 2 o'clock tomorrow, meet up. And I was like, yeah, all right, I'll try to make that. Like, totally was not going to try to make that. And then he goes, no, if you're on the team, you will make it tomorrow. I was like, oh, okay. So I put my shirt down and walked off and lifted a little bit, got my gym bag, and I went back to my dorm room. I didn't have a cell phone or anything. So I called him, pops in the landline. I was like, he's like, how'd your workout go? I was like, I think I joined the track team. And he's like, what? Cause full story, dad was like one of the highest recruited discus throwers in the nation is why we lived in South Carolina. Cause he got recruited to go to South Carolina. So like you know, immediately he's like, listen, you don't have to do this for me. Like, cause he was like the guy. And so it's like, you know, you don't try to relive my steps. I'm like, I don't know. I kind of just happened. I don't know. He's like, where are you going to go? I said, yeah, I'll go check it out. And showed up the next day. I'm, you know, 6 feet two, 172 pounds, soaking wet, 17 years old, you know, barely pubescent, basically just like little frame and everything. And then like all these monsters that are, you know, signed full scholarships to throw in the SEC, which at that point I didn't know what it was. And these monsters, you know, 240, 250, 280 pound guys that are freshmen. I'm like, holy cow, you're the biggest people I've ever seen. And they were friendly and they're like, hey man, where are you from? I was like, oh, I'm here. They're like, what do you do? I'm like, shot putting discus. And they're like, all right, cool. So I just started showing up to practice and basically was kind of treated like Rudy from the movie early on. But after the first 4 weeks, we did a lifting cycle. And then the first 4 weeks we tested and I got like way stronger in 4 weeks. And that was like that little dopamine. I mean, I had already lifted in high school, but not to that intensity. And with that group, I never lifted with a group before. And it was like, man, this camaraderie and this unit that we're all breathing the same air and just getting after it. And I got way stronger in that first year, in that first semester or the first month. And then the next 4 weeks, I got way stronger. The next 4 weeks, I got way stronger. So I was having this addictive dopamine hit that it was like, oh, so all I have to do is train hard as I possibly can and put a ton of effort. And I get this massive payout every 4 weeks of like the attaboys and the, wow, you're working hards and the, you know, my numbers shooting up out of the sky. And, you know, I already had a respect for the strength game, but now I was becoming strong. I was an athlete or could be an athlete, which I always looked up to athletes, but I knew I never was one. But I'm like, oh, I'm turning into an athlete. And then I realized I was turning into an athlete at a big real school in a big real program that I didn't realize was like the top two or three throws program in the nation that I just fell ass backwards onto. And then you kind of, you're talking to guys and you're eating lunch with them and, you know, they're talking about the conference meet and nationals and, you know, they're like, well, we got to go to, you got to try to get the NCAAs. I'm like, what's that? And they're like, the NCAA championships. I'm like, okay, what's that? And they're like, that's if you're like really, really good, they invite you to that. I'm like, okay, that's cool. And they're like, you know, if you're really good, you get to be an All-American. I'm like, ooh, what's that? You know, and they're like, well, this is, you know, whatever. And I'm like, who's an All-American? And there's like, I was like, oh, I was. And I'm like, that's badass. And so I met this real life All-American, you know, but I thought it was amazing. And I'm like, wow. And then I started realizing, oh, so I hang out with you and I do the same thing you do every day. And we go and eat together and you're not magic. You're not like this other creature. We eat the same stuff. We train the same way. We have the same coach and you're this All-American guy. So then I started getting the little seedling of thought of maybe I could be one of those All-American guys. And that became like my gold standard of what I wanted to accomplish in college, because I go, okay, well, that's what they say the good ones are. So let's go be one of the good ones. And then it just became like a, like, you know, was like steel rails, mind focus, you know, to kind of quote Moby Dick, like, this is where we're going. And whatever that means to get there is what we're going to do to get there. And so that was a way that, what, I mean, that day, heck, it was right around now, mid-August 1994, that just changed my life, the trajectory of my life in every way possible. Because without that, I wouldn't have been an athlete. Would I not have been an athlete, I wouldn't have understood how to train. I wouldn't have probably worked at Sornex, taken over, known what to do, and had a pulse on the training and the love for the training and the love for the hard life. And like literally everything about my life changed that one day. And that's why
it's like one of the coolest stories I've ever heard. Just like, okay, I'll be there at 2 tomorrow.
Tomorrow, I don't know. What are we going to do? Yeah, meet in the parking lot. But that was where it was so cool, because I had such little, I didn't know anything, nothing. And that was where, like, there was no preconceived notion. There was no anything. Just show up a place and start doing some stuff. And that's where I laugh, because it's very Forrest Gumpian, you know, like, go stand in a line, see where it takes you, you know? Yeah. And then for me, it was worth everything, because again, like, you know, a couple Olympic trials later and, you know, became a team captain. Like, I thought it was awesome. I came from an unknown walk-on guy that no one wanted, and I was able to break a SEC record and be a team captain my senior year. And then, so it was like that built the mindset of like, oh, this is doable. And insurmountable things that don't even make sense on paper are doable. And that was what I carried into Sornex. Like, oh, okay. So we're this little mom and pop business that very few people know about. That is, that doesn't have to be our lot in life. Like, we could outwork that. We could do things that doesn't make sense. And years later, people are like, how the heck did y'all get up to the top of this mountain? You're like, I don't know. Just put my head down and kept going. Didn't stop. And because that's pretty much what happened at South Carolina. Just, we put our head down. And then while you're putting your head down, you're overturning every rock, trying to find another key of success on the way up. And then you put your head up one day and you're like, oh, cool. I'm an All-American a couple of times. That thing I wanted to do, I'm one of those guys now. And then you just, that opens other doors, that opens other doors. And you just keep walking through those doors and with a new ammunition of confidence and capacity. And then you kind of start believing like, okay, anything's possible. Like, because there's no reason that kid at South Carolina should have ever been anything, you know, a last pick kid from Irmo, South Carolina, that wasn't an athlete should not have turned out to be, you know, a good athlete and a professional athlete later on. There's no reason for that. So that just showed me like, okay, don't read your own press. Don't listen to what everyone thinks you are. You could set your potential, and it's really fun to make people wrong about you.
I love it. And one of the things that I love too, is how you were talking about, I'm looking at this guy, he's an All-American, right? And I think that sometimes one of the things that I noticed, at least, because one of the questions, you know, that you'll get or that I'll get is like, okay, how do I get myself to the next level? Or how do I, you know, pull myself out of the situation? And I think so much of it is like who you're surrounded by, you know, finding somebody who's good at what you want to do. It's like, don't reinvent the wheel. Like if they're doing what you want to do, figure out how to learn from them, figure out how to work with them. And the fact that you got to actually do that every day, I think is just a real testament to that.
Oh, it was enormous. It was the biggest thing. And, you know, little did I know that, I mean, shoot, the four female throwers that were there at the same time all became either national champions or All-Americans multiple times, or Olympians, or all of them. So our female staff, our female team was incredible. Our males, I think out of that freshman group that we brought in, all of us became All-Americans like a ton of time. I was a four-time, other roommate was two-time, other roommate was eight-time, other roommate was eight-time. So it was like, you just kind of start realizing like, this is the standard we're going to live to. And it's very doable. And we're all in this together. Hey!
I have a joining, so...
I love
everyone
it.
Listening or watching, the twins apparently are leaving. These are my two youngest 4-year-olds.
Hey, girls.
You say hi to Bert.
Oh, wow. You guys are twins. Good to see you.
All right, girls. We'll see you later. You got to go out. Okay. Bye-bye. Yeah, I love those.
I love it. But yeah, you're just around these people that literally you spend time around every day and you see that they've succeeded and you start unpacking. You remember the movie The Edge with Anthony Hopkins?
Yes, I love that. I watch that movie all the time where they're fighting the grizzly bear. And
what does he say? What one man could do, another can do.
Yep.
And I just, you know, that movie came out while I was in college and it was like, I started to believe it. I'm like, okay, that guy's made an Olympic team. All right. He's not 12 feet tall. He's not made of steel cables. He's a man just like I am. And I go out and have a beer with him or have a steak or whatever. And it's like, we're very similar in many ways. He's just happened to already have done something that I want to do. So then I go, what are the little idiosyncrasies that person is using or their mindset? And so just interviewing people and talking to people and go, oh, I see how he makes those positive choices or he or she makes those positive choices. And those are, you know, in my opinion, led to that success. So then you start building your own diagram for success. And you just believe that after a while that no one's special. You know, you just go, okay. And I used to think about it. I used to like look at my phone and I was like, you know, I have 50 Olympians or 20 Olympians in my phone. That means these people do exist They're not mythical. They are people. I'm friends with them. We occupy the same space. 99% of the things that we do in a day are similar. The only thing is they've accomplished this one thing that I have yet to accomplish. Okay. Then I'll just keep going until I eventually hopefully get it. Like that's that, or it's just not that important to me, and that's okay. And then you just start realizing that most people quit, and then you just go, you just got to keep going. And that usually cuts down a lot of your competition if you just don't quit. So that, like I said, the track and field experience and the lifting experience there was the most probably, you know, besides a few really like biggie things in my life, probably the most important thing I've ever done in my life, because it set the framework up for everything.
No, it's so cool. And what's crazy to me is how it ends up propelling you into where you are now, right? Like wandering in there, going through that sets you up. So one of the things that I want to make sure that we cut, because I know we're starting to run out of time a little bit here.
Sorry, I talk a lot.
No, that's an awesome story. Like seriously, like one of the favorite stories I've ever heard, like just such a cool story. When it comes to the equipment and everything that you guys do, I think a lot of people, you know, they see some of the companies out there that maybe they recognize. When you're looking at this being like, how can we be better? Because I know a big part of what's made you all successful has been kind of the forward thinking and the improvements and everything else. For maybe kind of your layman, what is it maybe that they would notice if they're using some of your equipment, or maybe you know, something that would be easy to distinguish or something along those lines?
Well, it's interesting you say that. Like our goal was always to innovate, and innovate means create solutions and intentional solutions. And my father has always said, look at something, not for what it is, but what it can be. And that was always just something that's been pounded in my head for years. And so it was like that when I was training and competing. I knew I was undersized. I wasn't as big and as strong and as technically proficient as some of the guys that have been doing it longer. So then you just look, you go, how do I solve that problem through other methods? You know, I mean, I was doing things and early on that I think most people weren't taking into account, just simply because they didn't have to, because they were big and strong and they had all this other stuff. So pull that into business was, you know, to look at the industry, not and go, okay, everyone has, I'm making up something, everyone has a great leg press, let's copy the best leg press out there and make one. It was like, back up the truck, whiteboard the whole thing out, go, what is the industry doing right now well? Okay, cool. What is the industry doing right now poorly? You know, and then go, where, if I was running the industry, where would I want to push different things to make people better athletes, stronger, more durable? And then you start connecting all those dots and you realize there's white space there that people weren't looking at before and solving problems. So like one of the designs that we made, the landmine, I don't know if you're familiar with the landmine unit. Well, that unit came from my dad and I 22 years ago, and it was not ever intended to be a product. That was for me to train for the 2000 Olympic trials. And it was something that's probably a best-selling piece ever, or most copied piece ever. That was literally for my Olympic trials. That was the only purpose of it. But I knew I had to solve a problem to get more rotational ground-based strength because I needed to throw further. And then later it was, we were making custom racks, and custom racks are a pain in the butt to make. And there's always coaches wanting to have things differently, and you have to keep up with all these different SKUs. And if the coach ever wants to reorder what he got before, you have to have diagrams and drawings and all this other stuff. There's all these inherent wrong things of racks. So in 2007-ish, I sat down, I wrote, here are all the things a rack must do. Here's all the things that a rack does poorly. And I just kind of kept it out. And then we ended up designing what's called the base camp rack, or the rig system. So if you ever see a piece of tubing with holes on all four sides, that's probably see every company makes now. I drew that up on a napkin in 2007, because it would solve the problem, like 90% of the equipment problems at the time from a customizable standpoint were due to you didn't have enough options. So it was like taking a back seat to it and just looking from a, 30,000 foot view and going, what structure could be put together that would solve these problems, not only today, but give ultimate flexibility by the customer to go on their strength adventure journey through their equipment, that the customer then becomes empowered to build out their stuff. And so like probably most like proud of that, because that legitimately changed the face of the entire industry. It was made for that community, because they were doing things a stupid way before, and they were welding their own stuff and doing all this other stuff. So that was made like a palletized version. But I could say that that was put into place right as the functional type strength training was coming on. So it was the piece of hardware that allowed that to really flourish and grow. And so that's where, even if it's not a Sorenex piece, if you see one of those, that's a fingerprint of one of the things that we did, which is, wow. I'm probably pretty proud of that, because I know even if Sorenex goes out of business tomorrow, I die tomorrow, that there's going to be that style of rack is going to be around for a really long freaking time.
I don't even know if you can find them without that now, right? Like, it seems like they almost all have it now.
And do you know how hard that was to get in the industry? Everybody hated it.
The strength that was required with the four?
No, it wasn't the strength that required. People aren't early. And the few early adopters thought it was amazing and brilliant, but most people just, it looked different than everything out there. I'd hear, oh, it looks cheap. There's too many holes in it. It looks like it's going to be weak. I just don't like the way it looks. And I go, okay, who cares what it looks like? Do you realize you just increased your functional capacity by like 500%? Yeah, but I just don't like how it looks. Because they hadn't seen it before. Racks didn't have holes in them in all four sides. You look in 2007, 8, 9, or 2000, racks didn't look like that.
Yep.
But so part of it was just educating the customer and magnifying that and making it okay to use something that looks like that. And like you said, now, what rack doesn't look like that?
Yeah.
And, so it's like, we're not the only ones that are doing it, but, it's kind of funny to see. It makes me still, a little bit like, all right, that was cool. It was a good idea. I'm glad it worked out.
What about like the center mass bells?
Center mass bells. Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting one, because the design or the concept is really old. We got looking into it, and we actually went to do the patent on it. We couldn't do it in its original iteration because there were 17 prior patents going back to the 1800s. Wow. So the concept of it is not new in the least. Strangely enough, the patent that wasn't taken was to have the axis, the balance in all three axes of rotation, X, Y, and Z axis, to have it actually center mast was not taken, which was kind of what we were going for. But the first was like a little bit more oblong and some different things like that. And so we looked and, so the spherical dumbbells were, the old Indian knoll stones are from India. They were the similar way. And the Greeks had different stuff. And it's so funny because like everyone's like, oh, they're so, new. They're a great design. But really the key of it was having the center mass directly. That's why they call the center mass bell, directly over the palm of the hand, which allows for different pronation and supination movement without the flywheel effect that creates more tension or more torque. You get more range of motion, you get more fluidity of movement. So it kind of it's really where some equipment is very complex. The CMB is like I call it the simplest form of external load. Just make your hands weigh more, basically, yeah. Versus like this whole thing and this contraption, and everyone in the industry was trying to make all these things very, very complicated. And the CMB was extremely simple. And, but it makes sense. It's a sphere and it's an organic shape. There's a lot of stuff in the world that's round, but strangely enough, the other 17 people that had patents on it all made it more complicated than needed to be.
Yeah. Well, I mean, honestly, they just freaking look cool. It just looks cool when people use them. Cool.
And they look cool. They're different feel to them. I got to the point where I don't really even need dumbbells anymore. CMBs just feel better.
I got on there. So this is before I even had heard of you or anything else. And I don't know if I seen an ad or somebody using them. And I went on and the weight that I was looking for was actually sold out. So
I'm going to be grabbing some of those. I encourage you guys to, if you don't know what a center mass bell is, you got to check them out. Obviously we just heard the functionality behind them, but at the end of the day, they just freaking look cool.
They look cool. They're fun to use. You can use them one-handed, two-handed, you know, pretty much anything you're doing with a kettlebell or a dumbbell, or most things you can do a kettlebell, dumbbell, or a med ball, you can do with a CMB. So it just kind of, it covers a lot of bases.
Have you guys been doing as far as stock? Are you able to keep up? I know things have been growing for you.
Yeah. Stock is a hard one. Stock is a hard one. We just got some CMBs ready to go, and we posted about them, and then my buddy was like, hey, I want to get like so-and-so. I was like, all right, let me check stock. And then he hits me back right back. He's like, yep, they're sold out. I was like,
it's a good problem to have, right?
It is. But I want to make sure more people get them. I mean, I know they're a very good, viable tool that I want, because I know they can help people.
Yep. No, they're cool. Well, I know we got to start wrapping up. So one of the big things, and I mean, first off, what an awesome conversation, awesome story to hear kind of what got, we could do this for probably 3 hours and it would be a great time. And we'll have to
do another one. I'm sorry to ramble so much.
No, it's awesome, man. The story about, like, literally once you started saying it's like the Forrest Gump situation, I'm like, it really is. I mean, but how cool.
It's very weird. And you know, in some ways, you know, it's kind of cool because my profession keeps the story going, and the telling of the story, but the story's not over. This wasn't like, this was my athletic career, this is a thing I did one time, you know. It's like every day I fall back on things that I learned or a seed that was planted in my athletic career that came from that day. It bears fruit in my life daily, whether it's a coach that I threw against 25 years ago calling me and saying, hey man, I'm in high school now, I want to order a whole bunch of gear, you know, and we built a relationship 25 years ago, or something I learned, you know, in my training and that has been rumbling around in my head for 20 years. I'm like, oh, that's how you would load that movement more effectively. And then I'm able to create a piece of equipment or something. So that's the fun part. So my track and field, my athletic career hasn't ended yet. You know, it's pretty
well. Cool. And how many like schools, colleges, universities, do you guys actually supply now? I've seen you post like Florida State's all decked out now, it looks like. I mean, these aren't like little tiny colleges anymore. Like you guys are in some big places.
Yeah, I really don't know how many places at this point. I mean, I know we're in 100% the NFL in some regard. Some of our full facilities, some are just a product. I mean, there's hundreds of colleges. I mean, you know, got the Patriots, Lakers, Lions, Yankees, you know, I mean, kind of the who's who of that world. And
Patriots, you know, got that's pretty good company right there.
Yeah, I got a couple that, you know, the military units that, you know, you read books about. And then, you know, got some other just neat people like your, you know, your Joe Rogans and your Jocko Willinks and your, you know, Zach Browns and Thomas Rhett's and dudes like that. They're, you know, the Dude Perfect guys are cool. Like, you know, just that's the fun. That's our market. You know, the people that are doing extraordinary stuff that want better out of their life.
Do you get to meet some of those people, some of the celebrities and stuff? Do you ever hang out?
Yeah. Actually, they're mostly really cool. I mean, most of like all those people are generally very cool people. You know, Zach's one of my best friends and Thomas is awesome. And Rogan is, as you would think Rogan is. I mean, he's a great dude, like really, really gracious, interesting person, you know, and Jocko is, I say, better than advertised. So yeah, I mean, it's pretty neat when cool people that you think are cool, that are actually even cooler than that.
Yeah. Man, how awesome. Well, just to wrap it up, one of the things we talk a lot about on the podcast is, you know, liberation side of it, which is mindset. Obviously we've got a good chance to talk on that kind of things that you went through, you know, lifestyle, kind of how people are living. Next time we'll have to get more into that. Cause I know you could go into the strength training and stuff, and I would love to have that conversation. But lastly is the legacy. You've already done, you're still a young guy, but I mean, you've already done so many cool things and you've got this business that's getting so much publicity and even further than that, you're helping people, right? You're helping them. Safety yeah. with injuries and rehab and everything else that you're able to do. So when it comes to the legacy side, like when it is all said and done, like what do you hope maybe the legacy would be that you would leave behind whenever that day does come?
It's a good question. You know, I just want, you know, my family and friends to know how much I care about them and to know, you know, that they're the ones that pump me up to do stuff and to get excited about seeing the world again, not for what it is, but what it could be. And that's, that goes for people, that goes for situations, that goes for the, obviously the hardware designs of things, but that mindset, I just hope to pass on of like, don't look at your life for what it is, but what it can be. And I've just, if I go, I hope people say, yeah, he lived that way. And he maybe taught me to live that way too. So.
Awesome legacy to leave behind. So for the people who want to come check you out, where's the best place? Is it Instagram? Is it?
Yeah, probably website? Instagram is the most consistent, although I've been a little bit weary of it recently. I go in spurts. So Bert Soren on Instagram. I'm also on Facebook if people are still on that these days, although I might get rid of that. Sorenx, if you want the company side of it, we do some really rad stuff. Sorenx Outdoors, if you are more of a guy or girl that digs that side of the outdoor pursuits and the strength and conditioning that goes with it, sorenx.com. And that's about it, I think.
Yeah, you guys got to check it out for sure. Like seriously, because I was honestly wanting to talk to you because I'd seen, I think it was an Instagram story where you're on a bike, like shooting your bow. We didn't even get to talk about archery hunting.
Well, we'll have to do it again. Yeah, no, I was in there the other morning and I think it was, I was usually do a archery shot before breakfast every morning.
You got to tell everybody though, what, like before you eat, right? Isn't this how it works? Before you eat?
Yeah. So I get up and I do like a little quick warm up to get my body just halfway calibrated. And then as the closer the bow season comes, I have a shot distance and I add a yard to it every day if I'm successful. And I make sure it started at a distance that was not a chip shot. So there was some sort of pressure and some sort of potential for failure there. And then I try to supersize that mental stress and get stress inoculation of, and again, it's not horrible. It's not whatever, but if I get one arrow first shot of the day and no warm-up shots, no nothing, and if I hit the kill zone, then I get to eat breakfast, I get to have coffee, I get to have everything else. And if I don't, I have to go until at least noon without eating. And it's just a reminder to, you need to be better. You need to put in more work. You need to compete better. When the chips are down and you have to compete, you need to learn to do that. And then I give my, but I'm also giving myself the opportunity to show myself that I can do that. And so in the morning, when you look and you walk out to 68 yards or whatever it is, and you see this little deer target at the end of this, you know, funnel and through the woods, and you have one arrow in your hand and you're like, well, I hope my bow's still on. I hope my rangefinder is calibrated. Doesn't matter. All that crap is, put it aside. You have one arrow, close the deal. And, or you'll have a nice little reminder of your stomach grumbling all morning and you'll be pissed off about it for another day. And then you'll have to come back and reshoot that in the morning to move forward. And so part of that is just a stress inoculation of, you know, this stuff matters, make it matter, make it a reward, but also make it a detriment if you fail, because in real life, you know, a lot of times you don't get warmups. It's just, you better run what you brung, as they say. So
man, that's awesome.
My morning routine. And then one morning, it was raining real hard outside and I just was warming up on the bike and I was just kind of got in the mood. I was like, well, I'm going to shoot right now. So I was riding on the stationary bike like an idiot and listening to Freebird and shooting my bow. And that's just purely because I enjoyed it, wanted to do it.
Yeah. Oh man. What a fascinating guy, man. Like seriously, that's like, how many of you out there are having to hit a target with your bow before you can eat or drink any coffee? I mean, that right there, that sums it up.
Well, it's
right?
Been pretty cool because a lot of people started doing it. And, yeah. You know, a lot of people send me, they're like, hey, dude, you know, I earned my food this morning. I'm like, right, let's be really honest. Like, we're all blessed to have, not all, most of us are blessed to have food of some regard. Let's not forget that, but let's fight a little bit for it. Let's make it where you have to, the barrier of entry, like your comfort, is a little bit higher today. And I have to be switched on and I have to be focused and I have to want this bad enough, or sucks for you, go be hungry. Yep. You know, because back in the olden days when you had to wake up in the morning and the cortisol got your butt up early in the morning because you were hungry and you walked out with your bow or your gun or whatever and you had to hunt up some food or you weren't getting breakfast, you missed that first shot of the day, you're going to go hungry, probably.
Can you imagine how much less entitlement there'd be in the world if that was still the case?
It'd be awesome.
I know.
It'd be awesome. But what I would say to those listeners out there, challenge yourself in some way. It doesn't have to be archery or something like that. Pick a skill that is pretty freaking hard. There's certainly a chance for success, but there's certainly a chance for failure. And put something on it. You know, those little micro challenges every day really are enlightening and enriching to your life. And you don't get the comfort creep of, you know, nothing matters after a while because things are so easy. Like, it's okay sometimes to make things shitty. You know, I was talking to someone earlier today. I said, you know, sometimes if it's cold, you know, 40 degrees outside and rainy, I'll just go walk outside in the rain in a t-shirt and shorts for a while just to remember what it is, feels like to be miserable.
Yeah.
Because, man, when you come inside and you take off those wet clothes and you dry off and you get in a hot shower, it's amazing.
Yep.
Versus I'm going to sit on the couch on my ass and not do anything and my life is gray. Like, go make your life amazingly sucky in a minute, because the next, when you change it for the better, it's going to be awesome. And that's the fun of life, right? The ups and downs of it. But just don't, people need to stop blowing past those opportunities for failure and success. And I guarantee not only they become more capable, they'll be a lot happier.
That was the whole reason why I did the 75 hard challenge, right? Because it's like,
exactly.
I want to feel how bad this is going to suck for a while. And it seriously, and I know everybody's talked about it before, but or I've talked on the podcast about it before, but it's like it really was life changing for me, just yes. In the sense of like the routine, the discipline, all of the things that came from that. And so I totally agree. It's like, man, like, yeah, embrace the suck. Do something that you don't want to do. Sharpen your mental ability, you know, work through it. And then all of a sudden it's like all the stuff that used to suck doesn't suck, because you're actually forcing yourself to do stuff that sucked worse. And it's funny how it works.
It's really interesting. Yeah. The 75 hard, I haven't done that, but Sal and Andy are cool guys, are like those dudes. And what they're onto right there is really, really cool. Like, I've heard a lot of people talk about it, and, you know, the ethos of it is right in line what I believe as well. And I just, kudos to them for coming up with something really great.
Yeah, no, it was good stuff. Well, hey, I appreciate it. Make sure, if you guys aren't yet, check out SorenX. Make sure you're following Bert on Instagram at Bert Soren. Again, thanks, Bert. I appreciate it. We'll absolutely have to do this again.
Thank you, Derek. I'd love to come back on the show and talk about other nonsense.
Will do. Will do.
I absolutely love having you as a listener of the Primal King podcast. If you don't want to miss out on the great content, then it's time to hit that subscribe button right now. Do not be left behind. And then share your thoughts and feedback with a written review of the show. I read every single one of these, and it helps me make sure I am serving you best. It also allows others to find this content, and it builds this community. Make it an awesome day, and we'll see you next time.